Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I want to start with this headline that I just pulled down from one of my alternate right-wing news websites. The headline says, "Is what we are being publicly told about the war in Iran different from what is being planned behind the scenes?" Well, I hope so. Isn't that to be understood, that what we're being told publicly is different from what's being planned behind the scenes? This is what happens when you have two or three generations of urinalists who've never served in the military or I guess even read books about wars. Yes, absolutely. What's being planned behind the scenes is different from what we're being... Okay. I mean, Hegseth might not be the brightest bulb in the box, but I think he understands that part. But I do want to point out that the last time Iran was conquered was by the Muslim hordes. And they had hordes. You know why they called them the Muslim hordes? Because they came in large hordes of soldiers. I think we've got like 6,000 Marines there. Oh, well, I think we've been publicly told there are 3,500 Marines and 900 82nd Airborne. And so I don't know what qualifies as a horde. Now, before the Muslims conquered Iran, it was conquered one time before, and that was by Alexander the Great. And I think he had more than 3,500 Marines. So I was reading headlines this morning that it's possible that the Trump administration is planning for weeks of ground operations, they said, in Iran. Which brings to mind this oddity that we have lately of counting the war in days. Since when did we count the war in days? I mean, wasn't there a 100 years war? I know it was England, but still. Our war for independence lasted 8 years. World War II lasted 8 years. Right? 39 to 45, 6 years. Anyway, we measure wars in years, or at least we have in the past. But we're now in the digital age, and of course you have a hostile media. Hostile toward the idea of finally subduing and eliminating a criminally insane regime in Iran with potential for nuclear weapons. In fact, I have a story. Should I go right to the face full of mace there? I think I'll go right to the face full of mace. Let me see if I can find it. Here we go. Story, this is from Zero Hedge. The headline, "There's a lot of concern. GOP lawmakers are predicting disaster if troops are deployed to Iran." And when these GOP lawmakers, which means politicians, with the disaster they're predicting, it has nothing to do with losing the war. It has to do with them possibly losing elections in the midterms. Senator Nancy says, quote, that's Nancy Mace, by the way, who I've dubbed Faceful of Mace. I don't know why. I think I don't like her for some reason. Senator Nancy Faceful of Mace says, quote, "If a single boot of a single American soldier sets foot on Iranian soil, I will vote against this." That's Nancy Mace. Hey, Nancy, this is why the girls should stay home. Because here's the thing, Nancy, it doesn't matter if you vote against this. I think we've already seen that it really doesn't matter what you think about all this. And we certainly don't need to listen to you whine in the background as Iran is not going to be subdued and eliminated without boots on the ground. And if you think it is, that's because you've never picked up a rifle and volunteered to march into fire or even read books about people who did, Nancy. So Nancy's very concerned. She's going to vote against it so that she might be able to win her election there in wherever she's from. Rand Paul, in the meantime, says voters, he says, don't want $5 gasoline. Okay, well. All right. Well, that's fine, Rand. What does that have to do, the fact that people don't want to be uncomfortable about things, what does that have to do with subduing and eliminating a potentially nuclear-armed, insane Islamo-fascist regime that we should have moved on? Well, frankly, before Donald Trump started talking about it in the late 1980s. But as to Nancy Mace... should I go on with Rand Paul or? Yeah, Rand Paul, most people's paychecks, says Rand, most people's paychecks go to rent, gas, and food. People become increasingly against the war over time. Wow, what a brain trust Rand Paul is. You mean people don't like prolonged wars? Huh, wow, you must have read a few books, Rand. Well, at least Rand has read something, whereas the face full of Mace there, she's just... delusional. Josh Hawley in the meantime, I keep saying on the meantime, that's weird, having a mental block. Josh Hawley, another craven politician, says people want to see prices come down. They want gas to be cheaper. They want health care to be cheaper. Families need it. The administration may be able to... Oh, no, this isn't Josh Hawley. This is Zero Hedge. All right, I'll get back to that. Let's finish with Nancy, the face full of Mace. She says, support could change. Right now, she supports the aerial assault and the rockets and the missiles and the special forces and the cyber attacks. But she says support could change overnight in a flash. Okay, well, here's the thing, Nancy. At this point, based on what we've been told publicly, at least that flash will likely not be an Iranian nuclear bomb. Although, that would probably scare all these girls off. A nuclear bomb detonated by Iran would scare all these girls off just as effectively as high prices at the gas pump and all of that. So what these politicians should be demanding and working diligently to accomplish is the rapid conquest and installation of friendly allies in Persia. And they should start calling it Persia. I'll start listening to the Faceful of Mace and Josh Hawley and Rand Paul when they start calling Iran Persia. I mean... everyone in Washington seems ready and willing to substitute various pronouns, so why not substitute Persia for Iran? All right. You know, I keep hearing, I don't want to be too mean about it, but I keep hearing soft, middle-aged, overfed slobs who never volunteered to pick up a gun in defense of their country, or anyone, frankly. They keep decrying war. War as if war is evil in and of itself. And that's just not true. And I base that on the Bible, which is the ultimate authority for all questions of morality, is the Bible. And the Bible says a God is a man of war. And God even calls us soldiers in Paul's letters. Soldiers, he calls us. And if you read toward the end of the Bible, there's a war in heaven. So I understand that it's not exactly this kind of war being led by fallen men in a fallen world. But war in and of itself is not immoral. And if you don't think that Iran requires a war, you are not qualified to speak on the matter. Thank you very much. And I certainly wouldn't vote for you. Speaking of politics and Republicans and courage and all of that, let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina, where back in February, a Republican candidate for a District 1 seat on the Mecklenburg County Commission, his name is Aaron Marin. He was at home with his wife and children when someone shot up his house. Now, no one was hurt, but a tree, his cars, a mailbox, and a basketball court were riddled with gunfire, and there were shell casings all over his driveway. And we have a quote from Republican candidate Aaron Marin. He says, "This is happening in our community in Huntsville." Huntersville. "This is happening in what appears to be a safe neighborhood. I don't feel safe. My kids don't feel safe. It's disturbing." And he went on to say, although he was frightened and disturbed, he vowed to stay in the race. And here's the problem with vows, especially when after gunfire erupts. Be careful what you vow. The FBI is now involved, and Marin has said, he announced last Wednesday that he's withdrawing from the race, and his family had to move to another district. So this is politics in America today. And now there's no word on if it was the FBI's involvement that contributed to his withdrawal and going into hiding, because, you know, the FBI raided the former president's house, and maybe the FBI being involved was the final straw that scared Marin out of the race. Anyway, I can't blame the guy. Although the fact that he's running for office is a black mark against him already. But to withdraw because your house got shot up, that's perfectly understandable. But that's politics in America. And here's the thing about this kind of politics: it works. That's why if Iran blew off a nuclear bomb, most of our politicians would be afraid instead of encouraged, instead of enraged and motivated to destroy them even faster and more efficiently. And that's the state of politics in America today. We're being led by a bunch of scared girls who are worried about winning elections more than they're worried about Western civilization and their responsibility to preserve and protect the rights and the lives of their constituents. And see if we have any. Do we have any better news? I don't know if you'd call this better news, but this is from the death penalty file. Leonid Radvinsky died last week at the tender age of 43 years old of a particularly aggressive cancer. "Are you familiar with Leonid Radvinsky?" he asked, his extremely attractive audio engineer. I know. It sounds like the bad guy in a 007 novel or something, or a sci-fi. Leonid Radvinsky. He's the guy with the missiles on an island somewhere with a monocle and a cat. Anyway, he's actually a Ukrainian-American entrepreneur whose name... Now, I'm not going to mention his business because it's vile. And some things shouldn't even be discussed in public. What does the Bible say? The things they do in private shouldn't even be whispered about, what this guy did for a living. His name should be blotted out from under heaven. His name should be written in the earth. But he was basically a smut peddler since he was 21 years old. He's effectively a modern-day slave trader who virtually kidnapped and enslaved mostly Slavic women from his homeland and that area, that region. He kidnapped and enslaved them via webcams, And he died at the age of 43, at the very top of the pile of that particular industry that victimizes women via webcams. And yeah, he became a smut peddler at the age of 21. This is what gives Jews in the media a bad name. Guys like Leonid Radvinsky. And this is why death has to reign. It's unfortunate, but if Leonid Radvinsky had been allowed to live forever, he would have eventually tried to enslave, he would have tried to kidnap and enslave the whole world. It's the Weekly Worldview.
And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for all of that. And from him, we go to...
I want to go here first. The Department of Justice. So we have one of those, the Department of Justice, for some reason. And apparently its function is not only to be used against political enemies of the sitting president, the power and the party in power, but it exists to pursue something resembling justice. They are investigating, I should say. They have an investigation going on. Why? Because for years, certain states, legislatures, they have passed laws allowing men into women's prisons. Particularly the legislatures of California and Maine. They passed laws, I said, allowing men into women's prisons. And then those laws were signed by the governor, and then men started going into women's prisons. Well, now the Department of Justice at the federal level has launched an investigation. An investigation they've launched. And I'm asking, why do you need an investigation? It's not like they're hiding it. They passed laws. They voted. There's a public record of the whole thing. Do we need an investigation? Just arrest them, for crying out loud. But don't send them to prison. Because prison is immoral. That would be immoral to send them to prison. They should be arrested and put on trial. And when found guilty of these horrific crimes against humanity, they should be punished accordingly. But not in prison. Is that going to happen, that they'll be punished accordingly? No, because the investigation is being managed by the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, which means they won't bring actual criminal charges for what these people have done. But they are. So I hope they get to the bottom of how all this happens with their investigation. It's just a joke. Everything's just ridiculous. All right. How ridiculous are things getting? Well, the New York Post reported that a Secret Service agent dropped his pistol in the truck, the seat of a car, the truck or something there, while he was escorting Jill Biden around and shot himself. Well, the headline says he shot himself in the leg, but when you look the story up, he actually shot himself in the gluteus maximus, which is somewhat emblematic of the state of affairs in the world today. The most highly trained, skilled security professionals we have are shooting themselves in the glute because, well, they're just not paying attention. This is the era of not paying attention, at least not paying full attention to anyone, to anything, I should say. And I'm as guilty as anyone of just not paying full attention at pretty much at all times. I'm rarely paying full attention to anything. Rarely does anything have my undivided attention. And I can tell you that doesn't bode well for me or anyone else. But I'm concerned primarily about myself, just so you know. All right. But now, speaking of not paying attention, have you seen the video of the airliner crashing into the fire truck at LaGuardia Airport? Mm-hmm. It was like a slow motion train wreck. I couldn't believe it. And there's a headline in the New York Times, before the LaGuardia crash, why didn't the fire truck stop? I can't imagine why the fire truck didn't stop, because there was an airplane coming. I don't know. And there's audio of the tower saying, stop, stop, stop. But I don't know if the guy was up on his phone. It's just bizarre. But what a horrible tragedy. But I did warn that if we didn't get our act together, I think I said this easily 10 years ago, that someday we would lose the ability to have air travel at all, because we would just become too incompetent as a society to be able to fly people around without getting people killed. And it seems we're approaching that, and that's not something I ever wanted to see actually come true. I was kind of half joking at the time, but there was a reason I was only half joking. All right. Now, let's go to the artificial flavor file. We go to the artificial flavor file for a report on artificial intelligence. The OpenAI is reportedly, listen to this headline. Well, I can't read the whole headline. I have to substitute. There's certain things I just won't talk about. OpenAI drops plans to release their dirty mouth chatbot, basically. They were going to introduce a chatbot that was dirty-minded. Imagine that. And now there's a headline in Engadget.com that they've shelved the idea. They say it's on hold with no planned release date. Uh-huh. Okay, well, so you read that and you say, well, wait a second. Is this actually an ad for this chatbot? Because it seems like by saying they've dropped plans, but then they say it's on hold with no planned release dates. I don't know. It just sounds like an ad to me. Maybe it's test marketing. Just putting it out there to see how people respond. Anyway, they say they have no planned release date. The company, they say, had difficulty removing illegal behavior, like things I can't even say. Things that nobody would say if they have any shame. They couldn't stop their AI dirty-minded chatbot, dirty-mouth chatbot, from doing it. So, are you sure this isn't an ad? Oh, okay. OpenAI, according to Engadget.com, said that it wanted to conduct long-term research and that there was currently not enough empirical evidence on the subject of releasing a filthy-mouthed AI chatbot on society. Really? There's not enough empirical evidence? How about Leonid Radvinsky? Does that not count as any evidence? I would count that as some evidence. Isn't the fact that literally everyone around you is dying, is that not enough empirical evidence that pursuing your evil, wicked, sinful desires and then inflicting them on others for money, that's not enough empirical evidence that that's a terrible idea? Did you notice everybody's dying, or has that hasn't gotten through to you people yet? Okay. I noticed quite some time ago. All right. So there's your ad for OpenAI disguised as a news article. Now, speaking of AI, we go to spectator.org over in the formerly Great Britain. And they report on the fact, well, the headline says AI, the biggest heist in world history. And they talk in this article, which I highly recommend you read the whole article at spectator.org. AI products are built, that's what they call trained. You've heard that? I'm training my AI, uh-huh. They're trained on very real intellectual property created and owned by people and businesses not employed or compensated by the AI industry. Their work has been scraped from the internet. Everybody's work has been scraped from the internet. What does that mean? That means these companies building these artificial intelligence monstrosities are copying everybody's information without permission or payment. That's right. Spectator goes on, the material is housed in data centers and regurgitated in bits and pieces of people's cleverness, wisdom, creativity, and ingenuity. The very things that enable those people to feed their families. And revenues collected from the reassembly of the stolen copyrighted material is then kept by the AI companies. They're not sharing the money with the people that they're stealing the information from. And I appreciate this report from The Spectator. This is something I covered almost a year ago. I called it in July of 2025. If you go back and listen to my, listen to all the shows from July of 2025. And you'll see that I said, has anybody noticed that they're stealing everybody's information? Okay. Well, the folks at thespectator.org have noticed. They go on to say, without training on other people's property, there are no trillions of dollars in future revenue driving the valuations of the AI companies. Okay, well, the valuations, that's a whole nother story because we've seen all this before. You know, it's everything from the dot-com bust, remember all that? We've seen all this before where salesmen hype up the future potential beyond anything within the realm of possibility in order to sell stocks at astronomically inflated prices. And they walk away with big bags of money. And by the time everybody figures out what's going on, they've retired in the Bahamas. But this is different in that it's accompanied by the daylight heist of everything that we've ever written or thought about or made a living from. Just being vacuumed up and stolen by a bunch of creeps. How do we know they're a bunch of creeps? Because they all gathered in Davos last year, according to this article from spectator.org. And they put on display there what the Spectator calls, quite pithily, by the way, the entire ethos behind the AI heist, naked greed, which was encapsulated by an infamously dystopian video released by the World Economic Forum back in 2016. 8 predictions for the world in 2030. The number one prediction, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. And the Spectator points out, remember, it's you who will own nothing, not them, you. Hope you noticed that. And so they go on, the AI barons contend that their theft is legal. How do they contend this? Supposedly they're employing the idea of fair use. Fair use in copyright law is like when you were in sixth grade and the teacher wanted to familiarize everyone with a bit of a book or whatever, she would make some Xerox copies and hand them out to the class so that everybody could read along. That was considered fair use. They weren't going to charge the sixth grade teacher to make Xerox copies. And so the AI barons are being allowed to pretend that's what they're doing. Now, the sixth grade teacher, she did not collect any money for handing out the Xerox copies. And the AI barons stand to gain money from what they're doing. Hence, the fair use argument should fail. It should be summarily rejected. A judge would laugh in their face and put them in handcuffs if anybody was honestly paying attention. But apparently, that's one of the problems. Nobody's honestly paying attention. And the people who should be paying attention apparently are no longer honest. They might be in on it. They might be in on it. Because I can't imagine how they could allow such a ludicrous argument to pass constitutional muster or whatever it is there in court. Anyway, the AI barons insist to everyone and the judges and the politicians, they all say this has to be done. It has to be legal because it's transformative and we have to beat China before they beat us. excuse me? I don't think they have any copyright laws in China, at least not any real ones. The key legality is that the theft must be legal because we don't want to fall behind. Okay, well, I'm not buying any of that. And is it possible that someday in the future that these AI barons will have to stand trial for the theft of everything in broad daylight in front of everybody? Well, I hope so. The author there. Oh, and by the way, the article I'm reading from, it's copyrighted. And I'm reading from it, and I'm not compensating spectator.org. And so you might say, Doug, you're a hypocrite. But I don't make any money off this. Trust me, this costs me money. This costs me time and money. And this show isn't about making any money. This is about saving whatever can be salvaged, frankly. And speaking of salvage, the author closes with a reminder that 1990 rap phenom Vanilla Ice scraped a baseline for Ice Ice Baby from Queen. And later on in his career, when he least expected it, the infringement case cost him millions, basically destroyed his career. He ended up remodeling trailer houses outside of Orlando or something like that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, oh, if probably the best thing that ever happened to Vanilla Ice was he had to pick up a hammer and a tool belt to get a real job. But the author at spectator.org says that, and this tongue-in-cheek, he says, it turns out Mr. Ice simply didn't steal enough.
Human, rotten, filthy, stinking rich!
I think they lifted that guitar riff. I think they lifted that guitar riff and that scream
from
everybody else.
Stocking.
Yeah, from everybody else in the from 1975 on, I think, anyway. Let's see now. Should I go? Oh, has anyone else out there been to the grocery store lately? Oh, yes, you have. That's right. I forgot. Josh Hawley reminded us that we need prices to go down. Yeah. So we've all been to the grocery store, but I want to ask: have any of you been put in the charity headlock at the grocery store, like I experienced just this morning at the grocery store? I'm innocently trying to check out my items because there are no human checkers. I'm suffering through the self checkout. With a lot of stuff, which normally we don't do that. We have a human being check it out for us. And sometimes even we have someone put it in a bag for us, but not very often anymore. But I don't want to get started on that. But so we're there in the self-checkout line when a baby boomer, liberal, pasty, slightly overweight, older white chick. How do I know she was a liberal? Because she was wearing a mask, okay? So there you go. So this boomer, doomer, liberal chick, she's standing there looking at us as if, I don't know why. And she comes over to help us check out some stuff that can't be checked out manually because of something I don't remember. But she had to come and help us, which, believe me, it was like pulling teeth. But before she finishes with the checkout, as the screen comes up to pay, she actually said this, quote, would you like to donate to help people in need? Right? And then she just, that's it. She leaves that hanging out there. Like she's going to make me say, no, I don't want to help people in need, which she was perfectly fine with making me say that. Which I did say it. I said, no. So, and if you're implying I don't want to help people in need, I don't want to get into that argument with you. What I wanted to do was grab her mask and just start twisting it until her ears turned blue, but I refrained. Do you want to help people in need? I mean, I can't believe you're going to actually make people say no to that. That is psychological manipulation to the point of being disgusting. And it's being exercised by a cashier. I mean, if the cashiers can even be brainwashed into this type of psychological manipulation, I fear for the future of civilization, for crying out loud. I could have given her quite the lecture on how not only do I want to help people in need, I do help people in need. In fact, I could help you. But I didn't have time to get into it all. I'm sure I'll see her again, and she'll get me in the headlock again, and I'll have another opportunity. I hope. Okay, so speaking of all of that, we go from whatever that was, the charity headlock file, into the all a blur file. It's just all a blur at this point. We go to justthenews.com, where they report that an Ohio appeals court has made clear in a ruling that the Buckeye State cannot count refusal to affirm against parents while upholding the custody determination in a case. Unquote. So did you even understand what that meant? Well, they just said that's been made clear. Okay. Well, what you just said isn't clear. Refusal to affirm upholding a custody determination. I'm sorry. Those terms are simply not immediately clear to anyone. Well, to anyone upon which those terms are being inflicted. It's just not clear. Maybe the folks at Just the News think it's clear. I didn't find it clear at all. But apparently this is about a court opinion. And we go on to find that the opinion reads as follows, quote, "There is no requirement in Ohio law that parents must unquestionably accept and support their minor children's claims of transsexual identity or preferred pronouns." Unquote. So there's the, that's clear? That's being made clear? I would say that's unclear, on purpose even. Because they included the, well, first of all, they didn't say you can't or it must not be or it shall not be or it's illegal or it's immoral or we're striking it down. They didn't say any of that. They said there is no requirement that parents must unquestionably accept, not just accept, but accept and support. Mm-hmm. Identity or pronouns. Okay. I mean, to me, this reads like a roadmap for future lawyers to figure out how there might be a requirement and how, what is unquestionably and what does it mean to accept and support? Maybe people should have to accept but not support. Maybe support but not accept. Maybe. And maybe they need to accept the identity, but not the pronoun. Maybe the pronoun, not the identity. It's like a roadmap for future faggots and perverts and lawyers to figure out how to steal children, kidnap and molest children right in front of their parents in court. Anyway, it's just, okay. Let's see. We have, do I have more from this? From the ruling, the opinion, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're not going to call this a ruling. We hope this is just an opinion. From, they say, quote, "From a best interest analysis perspective, we see no serious concern presented by mothers and fathers' cautious reactions to disclosures of perceived transgender status and pronouns," unquote. Okay. They see no serious concern. Well, maybe in the not too distant future, a concern will be made, presented to them that, while it's, well, now that's a little more serious. And so, anyway, just yet another roadmap for some future perv. Now, the folks at justthenews.com, the urinalists over there, seem to be giddy because this opinion goes against the Ohio juvenile courts. Let's see. They had previously, They had previously opined that a parent's refusal to immediately affirm shows unfitness as a parent. All right. And so now this weak-kneed, godless legal dreck passes for clarity on that issue. I'm sorry. No. That's not clear. All the journalists at justthenews.com, they need to go back to school or, well, they need to pick up a Bible for crying out loud. Do I have more on this? The opinion. Oh, then they list the judges. Listen to this. This is the Oregon ad from justthenews.com, which is obviously funded by the Republican Party. The judgment was made by Judge Matt and Rob and Robin, elected after winning Republican primaries. They make sure we know that these clear-thinking judges are Republicans. And, here's why they're all so happy at justthenews.com. They say it's unusual among courts these days to avoid the language of gender ideology, such as referring to gender-confused males and females with the wrong sex pronouns. So is that where we're going to draw the line to be impressed with a judge that he won't call a boy she? I mean, I think that's setting the bar pretty low. Maybe that's just me. But the author doesn't realize, as he writes the article, that he himself is using the language of, I don't use the term gender ideology because I don't speak their language. This is child molester ideology, and the author is using the language of the child molesters because it's actually child molester ideology that they call gender ideology, and the author actually used that term. So the urinalism bar slides down the pole a couple more clicks. Oh, and then the author goes on to say, by contrast, in California, meanwhile, blah, 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 blah. You know how crazy they are out there. The judge calls everybody she and he and, you know. I've just noticed a formula with these alternative right-wing Republican MAGA. I don't know what you call them, but people pretending to be moral, dressing it up in conservatism, they have a formula by which I think they manipulate relatively stupid people into thinking that this is somehow good news. So, well, I'm here to make clear, I will be clear, that this is not clear. And now listen to how the article closes, because this fits the formula. They do all the rah-rah. Then they talk about how crazy everyone in California is. And then they're going to close with, here's how we're winning. This is the formula. Ohio lawmakers are already considering legislation to bar government agencies from defining parents as harmful or dangerous for affirming their children's sex, which the allegedly conservative Heritage Foundation calls the most comprehensive such legislation in the country. Okay, here's the thing. Your formula is not working on me. That last paragraph in the article does not encourage me. Nobody should be talking about defining sex. The fact that that's being discussed means someone has lost their mind or is some kind of criminally insane pervert. Anyone who wants to discuss or legislate about defining sex should be arrested for being a pervert. You know, it used to be in this country that you could not plot or advocate criminal activity without being classified as a criminal. You couldn't talk about it, you couldn't plan it, you couldn't plot it, you couldn't advocate criminal activity. The idea of defining sex, that's a criminal behavior. To think that you can even do that indicates to me that you're criminally insane. You know, that opening drum line, that opening drum line was what my brain felt like reading through that story. Felt like I was falling through a maze that was tilted up on its side, and I was just bouncing off like a pinball or something. Just trying to follow all that. So from there, we go to the victims of circumstance file and check in with Christina Applegate. You may or may not remember Christina Applegate. She was a TV star in the 1990s. And she has released a memoir. And in the memoir, Christina Applegate says she fell pregnant in April of 1991. And then she reads from a diary she kept at the time. This is the audiobooks version that's being promoted here by Breitbart. Maybe unintentionally. I'm not claiming that they're actually running an ad for Christina Applegate's publishing company. I don't want to imply anything like that. But so she says she fell pregnant, which is kind of odd, but actually maybe fairly descriptive of what happened. But here's what she wrote in her diary at the time. In 1991, quote, I found out I was 6.5 weeks pregnant. I love this. She wrote, unquote, sorry. She wrote, I love this. Then she wrote, quote, I always felt that if I ever got pregnant when I knew it was the wrong time, I wouldn't have any problem having an abortion. Oh, whatever. It isn't even a baby yet. That's BS, unquote, she wrote. She then goes on to write, quote, this creature's incredible, makes me feel whole, safe. Makes me feel whole and safe, unquote. And so Christina Applegate, obviously at this time, is not thinking clearly. You can tell by the way she writes that she was not thinking clearly. She goes on to say in her audio memoir that news of her pregnancy was poisoned by, quote, poisoned by the painful physical and emotional abuse from the baby's father, unquote. Days later, in another diary entry, she writes, I'm effing pregnant. And I'm killing my child on Thursday. I'm thinking, where the F can I go to recuperate from murder? His family will hate me. They don't believe in it. But I can't have this baby because I have work to do to entertain this effing world. Besides, I can't now, unquote. So those are the words from her actual diary. And then she goes on in the audiobook presentation, in her memoir, she says, quote, it breaks my heart to read these pages, unquote. It breaks her heart to read these pages, but she still said in the memoir that she fell pregnant. Why would you say you fell pregnant? Anyway, it's obvious to me that she's not yet able to deal with what she's done. And I think no human being can deal with murdering another human being. I don't think we're made to be able to deal with that. And Christina can't deal with it. Now, she also notes in her memoir that she says she foresaw a future where the bill for all the guilt and unhappiness and trauma would be paid by my body. That's what she says in her memoir. And she's currently dying of multiple sclerosis. She's currently dying of multiple sclerosis. And in her memoir, she says, I foresaw a future where the bill for all the guilt and unhappiness and trauma would be paid by my body. She can't say, or what she won't say, I don't know if she won't say, I think she can't say it, What she cannot seem to say is that my sin, the bill for all my sin would be paid by my body. She can't say that because she's never been taught about her sin. She thinks it's guilt, unhappiness, and trauma, which there's all of that is in there. But it's her sin. Oh, and the sins of others. But she hasn't yet dealt with her own sin. And now she's currently dying of multiple sclerosis, as I said. So her sin is going to become a front and center issue regarding the destiny of her eternal soul very soon. She goes on to say in her memoir, reading these words from more than three decades ago, I find that I suffer a kind of concussive awareness of the future impact of all these dark events from my early life. So she basically, she understands intuitively that the reason she's dying is because of her sin. Now, we don't know that her multiple sclerosis is directly connected to these actual sins. In fact, there's probably no conclusive evidence that that's the case. But intuitively, she knows she's dying because of her sin. But she hasn't been educated on how to identify her sin, let alone how to deal with it. You know, when God gave Adam the command not to eat from the tree in the Garden of Eden, he told him that in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. Which was really not so much an announcement of a curse or a threat. It was really more of a prediction regarding what would occur if and when Adam chose to assume the authority to identify good and evil. Because God didn't say, in the day you eat of it, I will surely kill you. He said, you shall surely die. And that's what Christina Applegate is experiencing right now in her life. Christina Applegate is, now she's experiencing it in a more acute sense, perhaps, with MS and an abortion to regret. Maybe she's experiencing it more acutely than you are. But it's the same sickness and death related to the same sin problem for all of us. And I hope someone explains to her how to be saved out of it. Because you can't deal with it. And there's only one person who can deal with it, and that's God, and he's dealt with it. He's dealt with it in the body of Jesus Christ. The blood of Christ on the cross is the only thing that can deal with Christina Applegate's sin or your sin or my sin. I hope someone explains that to her. But it's more than likely she's surrounded by people more concerned with getting her fortune than helping her with her future, her destiny. I fear that for her. I hope someone tells her that it's not her guilt, unhappiness, trauma, and concussive awareness that she needs to deal with. It's her sin. And I hope they tell her how to deal with it. The only way to deal with it is to admit it for what it is. And admit it to the one person who can help. Because there's only one. Nobody else can deal with it. No therapist. No agent. No mother or father. No best friend can deal with that. There's only one person who can deal with it. And the good news for everyone is that he already has dealt with it. You just have to deal with the part about admitting it. That's the easy part compared to what he had to do. So that's my advice for Christina Applegate, well, and everybody else out there. Okay. Now, speaking of all that, Let's now go to East Point Jail in Florida. This is from the God and Man at Jail file, which I wonder if I have to pay William F. Buckley to use that. Maybe not. I'll check with the fair use department to see if I have to compensate Mr. Buckley's estate for that. God and Man at Jail. Four women and 10 men at East Point, Florida, this past month expressed a desire to be baptized. That's right. And when they did, they got baptized. They had been attending Bible studies and listening to sermons from pastors in the nearby communities. So this is one of those good news, bad news situations. The good news, they were attending Bible studies. The bad news, they were listening to sermons from pastors in the nearby communities. I had a friend, a colleague, who recently dabbled with the idea that he might be mortal and he might need God. And he told me, I'm going to start going to church. And I said, don't do that. I said, that's probably a mistake. Don't go to church. Read the Bible. And I recommended that he start in Romans, not Genesis. Start in Romans and give me a call. Never heard from the guy again. So, but anyway, back to East Point, Florida jail, where a number of people have expressed a desire to be baptized, which that's an interesting way to say it, right? Because none of them said, I realize I'm destined for hellfire and damnation for all the bad things I've done, and I want to be saved. Save me, help. No, they want to get baptized. Why? Because they've been listening to sermons from pastors in nearby communities. And they probably got that at the Bible studies too. Here's the thing about attending Bible studies. It would be better to just study the Bible on your own and just pray to God and say, God, please show me the truth, because he will. If you really want to know, he'll show it to you. And you don't need a whole lot of other input from other people. But here we have some quotes from inmates. I prefer to call them prisoners. Inmates are like in an insane asylum. These people aren't crazy. They're just evil. That's all. Anyway, prisoner Ethan says, quote, I think I'm going to do right and keep the good Lord in my heart when I get out. I should be going home on the 14th, and I got to raise my little boy. I found Christ in jail, and I feel like the good Lord put me here, and we're all doing better each day. So I don't know if I get it. So did someone convince him that the good Lord put him in jail so that he would find the good Lord? Because I'm sure someone did convince him of that. And if he has found the Lord, and it's possible he has, here's the thing. Most people who misunderstand the grace of God are still capable of being saved by it because it's very powerful. And so even a relatively confused person can get saved if they understand what I said earlier about just admitting the part about you being a sinner and that you need God's help to save you. You need God to save you, not his help. You need him to do it, actually. I don't want to misstate it. We have another quote from a prisoner, Charles. Charles says, my goal is just to get out and just provide for my kids and be a great father to them. Stay off drugs and keep going to church and doing the right things. And so here's the thing, Charles. There's a pretty good chance that you're going to fail on at least one of, or two, or maybe all of those at some point in the not too distant future. And so I hope you're not counting on keeping up your end of the bargain. Although I don't know what you heard at those Bible studies or what you might have heard from those sermons. Another inmate, Robert, referenced Jeremiah 29:11, which I'm sure he heard at one of those Bible studies or from one of those sermons. You know Jeremiah 29:11? Oh no, they have a bad, I can't quote this because it's from a gay translation, so I have to pull this up in my Bible here. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end, right? Well, listen to what Robert read. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future.
What is that?
So, well, that's what the modern Bibles say. And the thing that the thing that's been obscured for poor Robert here, and I'm sorry, Charles and Robert and Ethan, the thing that's been obscured is, well, the truth of the Bible, like Jeremiah 29:11, is that's a promise to Israel. After, by the way, God said, I'm going to punish you people down to the ground. But I'm going to restore you, and I have thought. But people apply this to themselves, and then when they get out of jail and bad things keep happening to them, they're like, where is the Lord? I thought he had a plan to give me hope and a future. And they start thinking God is letting them down, when it's not God that's letting you down. It's whoever quoted that gay Bible to you, and they're the ones who let you down. Okay, and then now Breitbart, the journalist at Breitbart, closed the article, keeping to the formula, to now give us some good news here, how we're winning. Breitbart reports, the news comes as more and more young people across the United States have reportedly been embracing Christianity. Bible sales have risen significantly. What does embracing Christianity mean? What is that? I think that's getting baptized. That's, you're embracing Christianity. Hey, I'm willing to dunk all the way under the water. That's quite the embrace. I'm sorry. That's not enough to embrace Christianity. What you need to do is embrace Christ and what he did on the cross, and the fact that he rose from the dead, and the fact that he's willing to freely offer you eternal life if you'll just trust him for it. That's all. You don't have to stay off drugs and do good things and have a hope and a future and think that God plans to do you no harm. All that stuff is hogwash. You're a sinner, and you need to be saved because you have no ability to save yourself. All right. Should I end with this? I'll end with this from the Stone Cold Crazy File. this is... We have a report from studyfinds.com where you can go and read about studies that find things. And apparently there's been a review of 27 studies that find misinformation about mental health and neurodivergent conditions is widespread on social media, especially on TikTok. What? Misinformation about mental health and neurodivergent conditions. I think those two terms are misinformation. Mental health and neurodivergent conditions are simply descriptions of people not able to appropriately deal with their sin. In most cases, I'm not saying you couldn't have a physical defect or an injury that could cause you to have a genuinely... I know, but most of the people going on TikTok to find out what's wrong with me, they can't deal with their sin. A study find says that videos about ADHD contained inaccurate or unsupported claims. Okay, like what? Like there's such a thing as ADHD? How about that for an unsupported claim? Content about ADHD and autism had consistently higher misinformation rates, likely because these topics attract more personal storytelling and anecdote than clinical input. The whole industry around SSRI drugs and anti-anxiety medications and psychiatry and psychology in general involves mostly personal storytelling and anecdotes rather than anything clinical. The whole thing is fraught with peril. Researchers are calling on mental health organizations to counter misinformation. That's a non sequitur. Mental health organizations are primarily responsible for misinformation. What they researchers should stand up and call for pastors. Pastors and preachers need to stop countering the misinformation. But a study finds says many people now turn to social media for mental health answers before speaking to a doctor. Oh, okay. I wouldn't speak to a doctor. People now identify themselves by their alleged disability, by their alleged neurodivergent condition. They're just sinners. They're broken. They're fallen. They need God, not a head shrinker, and certainly not TikTok. That's the Weekly Worldview. We'll return next time. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.